Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. We're finally back. Sorry that everyone has to see this low angle from my phone, but we will get all this sorted in the next kind of couple weeks. But like more importantly, as we always like to do, let's dive right into what were your biggest reactions to obviously geopolitics, the Fed, obviously any data, including today's payrolls and market reactions.
Cool. So geopolitics, it's a bit of
And
a
Happy New Year, by the way, to you and everyone else
Happy New
that will
Year.
be soon watching this. So, yes.
It's going to be a very interesting year. Geopolitics was a bit of a surprise, but in reality, it's a bit of a nothing burger, right? Because from my perspective, which is a US economy, what it means is that potentially our prices are going lower. It will be good for consumer income, but it's not going to be a massive move. For sure, Venezuela has a lot of oil, but it's very expensive to take it out. Long-term investment, short-term, medium-term political uncertainty. I mean, Viresh doesn't see this thing as a sort of a regime change in oil markets, so not there.
Interesting choice of words.
Well, I mean, you know,
It's market related. This is not country related, so I think it's fine.
it's a question of perspective, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge economy, domestic driven, manufacturing is only 10% of the economy, so
Yeah.
energy prices are not that big a deal. And also in terms of fiscal, it looks like the administration really wants to minimize the cost of this move. So I know that President Trump has talked about increasing the military budget by 50%, but again, this has to go through Congress. I don't see any big.
Cutting the budget out the window, I guess. Well, unless growth's at 5%, but yeah.
So more important, the NFP the overall print was actually contrary to my expectation in the sense that it showed a stable to somewhat tighter labor market. Whether you look at unemployment that was down, wage growth that was up, or more subtle measures such as minorities unemployment relative to white unemployment, people who are working part-time because they can't find full-time job, all those data improved. So no sign of breakneck growth in employment. In fact, NFPs were lower, much lower than expected, but this was due to supply factor. Basically, the administration is telling us that 2.5 million migrants had left the US last year. We don't know. I mean, it's hard to get a good number. We know it's down. Labor supply is down, so employment is down. But from the perspective of the Fed, it's a balance between labor demand and supply that matters, and that balance improved with the unemployment rate falling. So nothing that would make the Fed cut this month, for instance. They are with the markets.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So, that's about it. You wanted to talk about productivity. So that was a really interesting one.
Just to tell people, I was mentioning to Dominique, it's been a busy week probably for a lot of people the first week, back in the markets for the new year. And I said, I kind of saw a headline showing like productivity like really high. And I was a little bit surprised, like, why the market didn't, massively react off that. So yeah, so that was the background.
So usually the market doesn't pay that much attention to productivity. Also, there is this conflict between labor market data and growth data.
Right.
Personally, I think the labor market data will probably prove more reliable because if you look at the detail of the growth data, it's a little strange. And also historically, whenever there has been a conflict between labor market and growth data, the labor market data has proved more reliable. And you are
Right.
seeing now two Fed presidents talking about the risk of a large revision to the growth data. But back to the productivity data, here's what was really interesting. The productivity was in line with expectation, and because it's based on growth, on GDP growth data, right? But where there was a big surprise was unit labor costs, so which is quite a bit different from productivity. Productivity is how much quantity of labor you need to produce stuff. Unit labor cost is the cost of that quantity of labor. So I mean, how much wage costs you need to produce stuff. And there was actually a big downside surprise on the unit labor cost, so the wage cost bit. And that's because the data that's used to compute those wage costs, which is called compensation per hour, that was much below than expected. So that data is more volatile, more noisy than other measures of wage costs. So what we got in
Right.
NFP today, but still, it's a sign that there are no inflationary pressure in the U.S. economy at this time.
Right.
Another sign.
Yeah, for me, I guess I was looking at it more because the narrative around, is because of AI, the benefits really kind of going through the much wider economy. And, one of the big takeaways would be is it significantly increasing productivity in the US? And when I saw that number, I was like, oh, it kind of seems strange.
Well, I think it perhaps for large firms, but one thing that's really striking at this time is the difference between large and firms and SMEs. So S&P 500 firms are doing well. Even the non-Mag 7 firms are catching up, profitable. But if you look at data on SMEs, bankruptcy data, for instance, it shows weaknesses. Bankruptcies are above where they were before the pandemic. You also look at employment data, so ADP data broken down by firm size. Firms, employment is contracting everywhere except for firms that have more than 500 workers. So the K-shaped recovery,
Yeah.
it's true for the consumer, but it's nothing new. The new K-shaped recovery, I think it could well be with businesses where you have this big difference between SMEs that have been hit by the tariff big times and also hit by the loss of migrant workers because illegal migrants are more likely to be working at SMEs than large firms and
Right.
struggling. And the thing is, SMEs account for close to half of US employment. So I suspect that because we are all working in financial market, we are focused on listed companies, but we are missing out the weaknesses in the SME sector.
Right. And well, one takeaway would be that SMEs would need to pay more to get workers to replace the migrant workers, as you were saying. But in reality, that's a lot of that SME is part of that kind of part of the economy that migrant workers would be purchasing goods, utilizing
Exactly.
services. So bringing it all together, just everything slowing down potentially in that. Yeah.
Spot on, spot on. The SMEs do not have the pricing power to pass on wage increases to their customers, so they can't pay the higher wages they would need to pay to bring in US workers to replace migrant workers. And that's a key problem with the administration. The sequencing, I think, was wrong in the sense that you had economic weaknesses, you had a bit of fiscal consolidation, the economy slowed before the tariff came in full force. So many businesses were not able to pass on the cost of the tariff, and I think that's another reason why we have these weaknesses, especially in the SME sector.
Right. And the idea that larger companies would have more, knowledge in utilizing AI for increasing efficiency and reducing costs. Is that also
More
a
cash,
narrative? Yeah.
100%, and more cash. As you know,
Yeah.
AI doesn't come free. And in fact, one of the reasons cited by your companies for freezing hiring is that they need to fund their AI investment. So I completely agree. That's
Yeah.
another matter.
Yeah. And then you're saying, so generally economy, the inflation, you don't th you well, I guess not a lot is priced in right now. So what's your call for cuts for the year again?
My call for inflation?
Sorry, what's your call for cuts for the rest of the
Oh,
year at this point? Yeah.
I'm still at 3 cuts because inflation is really slowing as I expected, as I've been expecting. But I might change that if I see greater risk of recession. Like, for instance, if we see unemployment increase, I think the Fed will cut because historically, past increases in unemployment have been a very reliable marker of recession. So today, we got a good number. But if that changes, I think the Fed will cut quite aggressively to prevent a recession, especially as disinflation is actually proceeding well. And about disinflation, by the way, what's been interesting is the slowdown in market rents. You know, the index of market rent is built using rents that are negotiated currently or renegotiated. Because as you know, we negotiate once you are somewhere, we don't negotiate the rent every month. It's more like every year or every 6 months. And
Yeah.
that's why there is a lag between the change in the rent under negotiations and the change in the rent in the CPI, with the former leading the latter. And right now, what we are
Right, that was
seeing.
everyone's frustration in 2021 when, OER was at like 2.3%, and everyone's like, oh, it's 8% on Zillow or whatever else, or yeah, more real time. Yeah.
Right, but what we're seeing in Zillow actually is a slowdown, and I think
Yeah.
that's linked with to the decrease in migrant workers. There are fewer people looking for housing in the US, and that's why housing disinflation is accelerating. And so that's another factor why I'm very positive on the inflation outlook.
Okay. And this idea, I kind of like half saw it, sorry, that President Trump was saying he's going to try and prevent large investors from buying homes in the US. Is that even possible or?
I'm not sure. So there is an issue, perhaps, with collusion in the residential real estate
Probably is
market
true. Yeah.
of renters using algos to agree on rents. And there was a lawsuit in front of the Federal Trade Commission that was just dismissed by the administration. So more than ownership, perhaps there is an issue with collusion in terms of the rent setting, I'm not sure. I think the only way to make housing more affordable is to have consumer income increase faster than house prices. And that
Right. I
means
guess build more housing too would be another.
100%,
Yeah.
100%,
Yes.
affordable housing.
Affordable, yeah. Okay. And general like market reactions to the data this week, I guess fairly quiet. Yeah, what's your big takeaways?
So, I mean, this was the most important one was the NFP. Otherwise, it was a fairly quiet week. I think the more important data besides the NFP is coming next week. So, CPI, PPI, we are back on track. And the consensus is neutral, about 0.3% month on month. It's neither a good nor a bad data number. What will be interesting actually is the January data because of the residual seasonality. You know, it's often higher. The consensus forecast, in my view, it's not enough to move the Fed one way or another. The 0.3 month on month CPI is Fed on hold in January.
Yeah.
The other data that we're getting is retail sales. And there, you know, it's the consensus is 0.4% month on month, both for the headline and the control group, which is about 0 to 1%, 0 to 0.1% real. So a low number, but this is a November retail sales, and it could be a payback for the high number we got in October, 0.8% for the control group. So there again, it's not the consensus.
Why is it November, not December, or is it always delayed that much?
Oh, we are digging ourselves out of the shutdown still.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I think, well, there's other geopolitical stuff. I'm probably much more in like the kind of slightly bullish on the dollar and the US, you know, some of that can be from geopolitical issues, but also, you know, that growth is definitely is relatively holding up. Obviously, if Trump announced Hassett tomorrow, that's probably all bets are off. But looks like he's walked that back. Do you have a view on them?
If Trump does what?
Chooses Hassett. Yeah.
I actually don't think it makes that much of a difference. I think the perhaps equally as important is whether Chair Powell decides to stay on
Right, I saw
as
that. I saw your
governor.
comments. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, so. Monetary policy is an art, not a science. So there is always a little bit of room to be somewhat more hawkish or someone more dovish than reasonable people. But if you go like super dovish, you know what's going to happen. Bonds will sell off, financial condition. I mean, if you go super dovish, the market impact will be negative and financial conditions will tighten. And on top of that, you have the issue of, you know, the 12 voting members of the FOMC. So if the chair comes up with views without being able to convince his committee members, they will just outvote him and he will lose credibility. So in my view, there is a positive path ahead, both for Trump and the Fed, where they converge on a reasonable policy path, perhaps a tad more dovish than otherwise. But the idea that we are going to have a Fed chair who is going to cut massively, I don't think it will work out.
Yeah. And the idea that the impact of the tax cuts, what's your view on that? Because a lot of the stuff is coming into action now. Is that correct?
So I just wrote about this week, and basically what's happened is that last year taxpayers did not adjust their withholding, even though the OBBB cut the 2025 tax rate. So people overpaid, basically. A
Fine.
statutory person says that as a result, they will get bigger refunds this year. When they file their taxes for last year, so mainly in April. I've looked at the data. I think it could be about 85 billion. And part of that will be offset by the higher tariff rates. But overall, I think the deficit could go up by about half a percentage point of GDP this year. But here is the problem. This is mainly tax cuts. And the problem with tax cuts is that if they are saved, they don't have any impact on growth. And I think a good chunk, most of the cuts will be saved for two reasons. Reason number one, if you look at the distribution of the tax cut, like 90% goes to the top 20% of a household with a lowest propensity to spend. So those guys, like if you give a tax break to Elon Musk, he's not going to go out and buy a lot of Tesla. He's going to buy more financial assets, right? And okay, he's the wealthiest taxpayer in America, but I think that applies.
Fine, I got the point. Which I agree. Yeah, it
So
makes a lot of
there
sense.
is that issue. It's the distribution is skewed towards people who tend to save more than spend. And then the other issue is that if you look at unemployment and the savings rate, there is a positive relationship between the two. The data is in my note. And that's because when unemployment goes up, people get a bit fearful and they think, oh, I might lose my job. I have to save more for a rainy day. That's what I think is likely to happen this year, unless the labor market improves dramatically, which is not my base case scenario. People are a little fearful, and I think they will stash a good amount of the higher refund in their 401k rather than spend it.
And just updated on your view of some kind of like tariff rebate.
So tariff rebate are not on. In fact, I suspect a reason Secretary Bessent has been talking so much about the higher refunds is precisely because he doesn't want to do the $2,000 tariff checks that were discussed at some point. I would add that it's not just Secretary Bessent, but Congress as well. And there you can see clearly that President Trump control of Congress is weakening. The conservatives in Congress are unlikely to go for additional fiscalism. And President Trump himself actually is no longer talking about the $2,000 tariff
Okay.
rebate check. So that's it. The OBBB and the higher refunds are it for this year, I think.
Okay. All right, before we go, do you want to touch on the third rail, geopolitics at all or no?
You mean Greenland?
Or
So
next, yeah.
people who are much better informed and smarter than I am says that a plausible scenario is that the Europeans will actually put pressure on Denmark to meet the US demand to sell Greenland, or and that of course would create political issues for Europe, and sort of pro-Europe consensus would be weakened, which definitely would have negative market implications. So that's definitely one big story to look at for this
Yeah.
year. And
You think European leaders may put pressure on Denmark to sell? Are you
well,
saying?
if you listen to international relations superstar like Professor Mosheimer from the University of Chicago, this is a scenario he's been discussing and that he seems to think is plausible. Our president has made clear he needs Denmark, he's not ruled a military intervention. And for the Europeans, voluntarily ceding that Greenland to the US could be a better solution than a conflict with the US, especially since they need US support to continue the war.
Right.
So, I'm not an
Silly
IRC.
question. Why wouldn't they just sell like part of it, like the top, the most northern one
Ah,
fifth?
I
Yeah,
see
I just thought about that.
the trader is talking. That would be a rational compromise, but our president, I fear, has his eyes set on the whole island. And also, if you look at the map, it is very consistent. Incorporating Greenland in the US is very consistent with the US focus on increasing its control of the Western Hemisphere, right? And also,
Right.
it would completely change the geopolitical balance in the Arctic. So, when I
Yeah.
first heard the idea, I thought it was a bit outlandish, but actually, it's quite consistent with everything else the administration has been saying. So, yeah, this is
Yeah,
definitely
that's exactly what the hell is going on.
something
I'm
to
gonna have to laugh
follow
about these.
for
Right.
this year.
Okay, and last question on that. So to bring it back to markets too. So obviously there'd be geopolitical repercussions, but if it's like $300 or $400 billion to buy, I have no idea. I mean, and then if those numbers are like, would the U.S. like issue a bunch of 10-year bonds to pay for it, or 30-year bonds, or you know.
Could be very interesting. I mean, it could issue very long-term bonds to spread the
Right.
costs to build the bond market and to signal its commitment to keeping Greenland for the long run.
Right.
But that's
Okay.
definitely a very interesting aspect.
Yeah, I haven't heard people talking about like what would like financially, logistically, how would you execute on a plan like that? I guess you could also try and do it like over a 10-year period or something like that. And
Or
you just have to
Greenland could
PV back. Yeah.
offer it for a symbolic Danish tenner. That is, we don't know what the price will be set
Exactly.
at.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, this was great getting back in the swing of things, and
Indeed.
awesome to see you as always.
Thank you.
Yeah. And yeah, we hope everyone enjoys these. And as always, please reach out, you know, ask us any topics you want us to focus on, discuss, and hope everyone enjoys it and have a great weekend. As do you. I wish you a great weekend as well.
And you, Andrew, and good luck to everybody.
Awesome. Thanks. Okay. Bye, everyone. Bye.